go ahead and give us a call, 504-260-0995. Gregory stepped out for a second. He'll be back in about 5-10 minutes, just to be fair. But you can go ahead and line up, and you can get some financial advice from the man with the expertise. Also, download the Winning at Life app. It'll get you our phone number to call in the show. It's on the front screen. You don't have to remember phone numbers anymore, but 504-260-0995. Big news in the financial world today. This law that we've been following for you on the show in California that is going to transform the relationship between, you know, it's you can tell this is sort of aimed at Uber and Lyft, but this is really at any of the gig economy type apps. So this includes like a DoorDash or a waiter or an Uber Eats or in any of those where you can turn on an app, go make a couple bucks and then turn it off and get back to your life. Well, California doesn't necessarily like that. Because, you know, with all these little gig economy workers and stuff, well, we just don't have enough control over these people. They're way too free and unregulated for our liking, and we could probably get more taxes out of these guys, and if we could make their employment a little more structured, then we could force them basically into behave the way we prefer. You know, it's just the basic stuff, but there's going to be a lot of unintended consequences to this bill. But the California lawmakers, this has passed the state assembly. It's got to get through the Senate, which it's expected to do. Governor Gavin Newsom is expected to sign it. And if everything goes the way it looks like it's going to go over here on Business Insider, then this thing could be enacted January 1st, which January 1st, 2020 sounds like so far in the future. The Jetsons are flying around in their cars, but that's really just about, what, 3.5 months? Yeah, we're flying through the year. Now, Uber and Lyft were downplaying it. People were getting their opinions on this every step of the way. Uber and Lyft were first saying, well, this isn't going to change the relationship. This is just going to kind of clarify the existing laws and sort of firm that up and take out some of the gray area there. And then as people were reading more and more about this bill, they were like, no, Uber and Lyft, I'm pretty sure this is going to fundamentally alter the relationship you have with your drivers. And we also noticed that you've pledged to spend about $90 million in lobbying efforts to stop similar bills like this, not just in California, but around the country. You must really think this is more serious than you're letting on. So in their initial reaction here, we have Uber and Lyft, the two big giants here, taking absolutely different approaches. Lyft this afternoon. Now, this just passed yesterday, and so they've had a day to come up with their statements and kind of fine craft them. You're not getting the first glance reaction to this, that you're getting a thoughtful glance. And Lyft is going down the road of saying, well, listen, if they're going to do this, you're going to hurt a majority of the drivers that are doing this not as their primary gig. They're just doing this on a supplemental income basis. Lyft, their co-founder and president, John Zimmer, said at a Deutsche Bank conference this week that, listen, 91% of Lyft drivers drive less than 20 hours per week. 76% of the drivers drive less than 10 hours per week. These people are not full-time employees. They are not even employees. They shouldn't be treated as such. But it sounds like they're already digesting the idea that, all right, well, what's going to happen if these people that are clearly just doing this as a supplemental income basis, what if they're made to be the full employee? Well, Lyft is going to have more power over them. Lyft is going to be able to make a schedule for them. Right now, Lyft doesn't do that. They come and go as they please. And Lyft will have the ability to say, listen, we need more people working on Saturday. John, you're going to have to work on Saturday. Sally, you're going to have to work on Saturday. They can't do that now. Why? Because they're not employees. Lyft isn't their boss. They can't tell them what to do. There will be more taxes paid. There will be more cost that Lyft is going to have to eat. They will have to provide all kinds of benefits for them because, man, if you're an employee in California, all these other rules and regulations clock in. Now you got to do paid maternity leave or whatever, whatever other benefits that they've imagined and passed through the California state legislature. So Lyft is saying, well, look, this is going to cause our service to cost more. But what it's also going to do is it's going to make it harder for a third ride sharing app to come rise to the level of Uber and Lyft because they've basically taken the island, built a moat, and then pulled up the drawbridge once this thing passes. Now, Uber had a very different reaction, and we'll get their stock reaction here coming up in the numbers. But Uber did not take the same approach that Lyft did. Lyft's approach was, well, we're just going to have to find out how to live with this. Uber's like, nah, this doesn't really change anything. We've already got a legal loophole. And they can pass this law if they want. We're not going to count them as drivers starting January 1st anyway, even if this does get passed and signed into law. because Uber's lawyers came out today and they were saying both on Twitter and then a link back to a public statement of theirs. I'm looking at the write-up over here from Zero Hedge, where some spokesman for Uber said, yeah, by the letter of the law, our drivers do not count as our employees. They are not fundamental to what we do. They do not come to work for Uber. We are a technology platform that connects people who need a ride with people who have a car. So unless you're coming in and typing out some code for us, then you're not really working for Uber. You're working for yourselves. And it's no different than if I put an ad on Craigslist that said, hey, anybody need a ride to the airport? Pay me $40. And someone answers that. Is that person an employee of Craigslist? That was the example that they used. And so Uber's fighting this. Lyft is going to try
but
go along
that
to get
side,
along.
You're doing the post to Craigslist. Craigslist is not contracting you to handle these leads that they find.
We're going to see who's right and who's wrong, because Lyft is just going to try and adopt this new law and work with it as best as they can. Uber's going to fight it.
It comes down to what gets a lot of people in trouble with businesses. Oh, you're a contract employee, but you're the only one they work for, and there's a desk for you in their office, and you go there every day, and they're treating you as a 1099. You're not a 1099 employee. Now, if that driver has another job, and then on the side, they're doing Uber as well as Lyft, because I've been in an Uber, and they have the Lyft sticker on their car as well. I ask them about it, and it depends on what's going on, which way they're rolling in that case. But if their only job is for Uber, that might be a little bit difficult, because it's kind of like that desk. They're using our app. It's the only one, and they're getting all their work from us if we're Uber. So that makes it a little bit tougher if you are their only source of income and you're sending them the work. You're not controlling when, but you are controlling the work. And I'll take this to the next step of, a week or so ago, we talked about what Amazon is doing with this
The last
mile
guys. Yeah.
Delivery. And they're saying, oh, those are contract firms and those are employees of those firms, except Amazon's controlling every aspect of those businesses. And I think it's ultimately where it gets Amazon. And then you're next day or 2 day delivery with Prime's probably going to go away, and it's not, enjoy it while you have it, but it's not going to stay that long. Now, one reason they're wanting to fight it at Uber, and you're saying Lyft might want to embrace it, but Lyft is going to be at a competitive disadvantage because their expenses are going up when you have employees.
Now, the interesting part is, how does this play out in the stock market? And we can see their stock prices, but that leads us into the numbers segment.
Well, I don't know about Uber stock price, but I just know it's going to mean even longer for them to get to profitability.
Well, this passed the legislature yesterday in California. They still have to put it through the Senate and the governor sign it. So it's not really official yet, but it's pretty much a done deal. This was really the last significant roadblock. Uber is up 1.5% today. Lyft is up 2.4% today. And you know what I think that portends? That this has become a wide moat stock. If this can cascade out through the rest of the country, then Uber and Lyft are pretty much locked in as the big players in the market. And it's going to be so much harder for a new third party to come in and compete in the fray.
I agree. And I think they almost have the market nearly trained that even if they were to increase prices, people will still use it and they're the go-to. What's their alternative? To riding cabs?
I can't go back to cabs,
Gregory. I'm not going back to cabs.
Okay, in China, 20 years ago, in a small apartment, we're talking 1999, Jack Ma and a team of 17 other associates.
17 people in this small, tiny apartment started selling books or shoes or something.
They started what became the Alibaba Group. It has now grown 20 years later into the largest e-commerce group. And here's the only stat you need to know. More than triple Amazon's total reported sales in 2018. So you know how big Amazon is here in America? Not you, Gregory. I'm talking to the guy listening. All right, you nod his head yes. Alibaba did three times that last year. He's retiring now. Alibaba's worth $460 billion. His stake in that puts him as China's richest man. He's worth about $40 billion. He's in his mid-50s. The thing that makes me think, what I think about when I see a situation like this is, why now? Why not do it earlier? Why not do it later? When you have more than enough money to comfortably retire in the lifestyle you're accustomed to, how do you know when is a good time to pull that trigger?
Well, how long has that company been publicly traded? Not very long.
Like 5-6 years?
That long?
Maybe not even that long.
I guess time flies when you're having a good time.
Good show, at least.
Yeah. And one of the things, I don't know China's rules on, you know, you just can't go willy-nilly selling stock. So I don't know what their rules are, but he's worth $40 billion. I'd probably be like Bezos, selling a billion of it a year if I could. Why would you hang on to it? It might not be around.
Okay,
or China might want to take it over. China might want to just take all your stock.
The IPO was September 19th, 2014. So almost exactly 5 years
ago. Close to 5 years. And pretty cool.
One weird thing I learned is that in order for Jack Ma to retire, they had to formulate an entire succession plan, sort of like an estate plan for his position within the corporation, submit it to the Chinese government and have them approve it.
That might be one of the reasons he's wanting to retire to do something else, is not have to be dealing with the committee. That's the Chinese government, their political party.
Well, they gotta
probably having to oversee, approve, be involved in everything else. He, you know, how much is good for him? You know, it's just any part of that wealth that he has and can go do something else. But there has to be something else he's wanting to do. He's not going to go just back to that apartment, set in a chair.
Right. Well, look, for so many people, their decision on when they retire hinges so much on, do I have enough money to live comfortably for the rest of my years? Once that's solved, then you just had, he had this pure tug of war between, well, you know, if I retire, then what am I going to do? Am I just going to wither away and be irrelevant? But also, am I just going to stay at work every day and not get to know my family and my grandkids, or do some philanthropy or travel or enjoy life some? So it's just that classic struggle, but just a more pure form of it.
See, he's in one thing from a business standpoint, he has that company to where it needs to be. A company doesn't need him anymore. There's a lot more than 17 employees there. It's doing a lot of revenue. And if it was to falter or flounder, which is highly unlikely because of its size and the market that it essentially sells to, is China itself is its core market that's going to continue to grow over time. But he can move on to do something else. So what it means is now he has options and he can step away, and he's not dependent upon that business sending him a check. He's got a huge amount of stock he could sell every month, every year going forward. He has options. So he probably does have something else in mind, but probably different from what he's doing, and probably disconnects him from government oversight, I would think.
We'll talk about the other side of that coin. Say you have this flowery notion that you're going to retire and just hang out with your kids and your grandkids and spend it all with family and be the family man that you've been missing out on because you've been so wrapped up in your career this whole time.
Well, from a kid's standpoint, now I would probably say from his standpoint, probably the grandkids, but he's not sitting there at the house in the chair waiting to say, gosh, it's another hour and a half before kids go to school. What else? I've been sitting here waiting all day. No, he's doing something else. There's something else in mind. He might be wanting to have 20 acres not far from where the grandkids live, to have some horses and cows and whatever. There's something in mind that he wants to do. Maybe some philanthropy, maybe to start up some other businesses, maybe to buy real estate on another continent. I do think there's something else. And it could be the core thing is having the time to spend with the kids and family, and maybe he likes mowing the grass. I particularly wouldn't be too fond of that as my job for killing time, but I still think there's something core that he wants to do since he now has options.
Mike in Mandeville, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Mike?
Good evening, gentlemen. I was listening to your conversation about Lyft and Uber and about them 1099-ing people. I think it's in California. And the people trying to, change their tax exemptions or whatever it is, become a part of the company, excuse me. Well, I work for a food delivery company, and, of course, schedule my hours every week, and I work off of an app just like Uber and Lyft does, and all my, work comes from the app. I was just wondering, they 1099 me also. Do you think that's correct what they're doing?
I think it's probably correct from what they're doing. You're not going to be the one to get them to change. Say, oh, no, I'm a W-2 employee. They'll just cut you off. From that standpoint, it's how you're handling that. You're going to have regulators are probably what's coming in and looking at that industry. And this doesn't mean it's wholesale across, and this might be state by state there, but you also probably should consider how you're structuring that to take advantage of your vehicle and write-offs. And maybe you might should be an LLC that's contracted to these companies. Just think outside the box a little bit.
Thank you, Mike. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We're Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. Please don't worry,
'cause I'm all right. This is Winning It Life, live financial news talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Welcome back with us. We got two more segments, so get the phone, make the call. 504-260-0995. So our caller,
Mike,
that we finished up last segment with had an additional question regarding how much to do withholding. And
set the scenario. He's a delivery driver. He gets paid as a 1099 employee. And since they don't do the withholding, what's a good rule of thumb on how much to withhold on his own?
Well, he has to look if that's his part-time job, that's income that's going to be added to what he's doing. We have a progressive tax system. So the more you make, the more you pay. Subject to the tax bracketing there. And I would just look at being this is add-on income. He needs to look at what his bracket is there. And I just don't know what his income is. He might could just withhold 10%. He might need to be withholding 20% from that, depending on where that income's added on at. And that's the thing is to set aside that money or pay, go ahead and give it to Uncle Sam quarterly. And kind of do the math and kind of stick that close. Some people have this flaw. Well, I like getting the refunds. I don't like getting refunds. I'd rather pay a little interest and owe, but don't get yourself in a situation that you owe more than you can deal with at the time. And that income's nice, but I just would not like to get any ugly letters from Uncle Sam, which is the IRS. The Treasury will send you letters if you owe them some money. So don't get behind the eight ball on that one.
You had also mentioned to Mike the possibility of getting a little business structuring, maybe an LLC or something to that effect.
Yeah, that you're running this 1099 business through. Otherwise, you're running a Schedule C, and you're just not necessarily possibly maybe not taking advantage of the tax structure that's put in place for you for write-offs and such. And I would, if he's serious about this and going to make some money, I would seriously maybe go give Jude Heath a call, CPA, and look at what could he do to maximize his situation there. Is, we have the right under the law to pay only what we have to the IRS. We don't have to leave extra on the table for them. I don't tip the government extra. I think I do my part. I really do.
Well, I do my part, and if they need a few extra bucks, I'll get some traffic tickets here and there. You'll get a little bit more out of Parker.
Oh, that's for the local community. We're talking about the feds and the state.
I consider that my gratuity, though, me paying my parking tickets on time. All right.
Would you hear about something about city of New Orleans having to give parking ticket money back? I saw something about that for a certain period of time. I was thinking, I don't recall ever getting any tickets from them and with a combination of paying it.
Okay.
But even thereof, I didn't get any red light tickets or whatever from cameras from Orleans Parish back then.
All right. The details on that were the New Orleans city set up their traffic cameras in 2008. And for the first 2 years, it was run by an independent third party.
Like the water department or something?
It was run
by... It was a different entity than the police department.
It was a company in the greater Phoenix metro. They were in like a suburb of Phoenix.
Yeah.
And so NOPD took it over in 2010.
But it also had to do with another city department it was being run through besides the PD.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was. And it was on the civilian side, not the law enforcement side. And that was a legal loophole that for some reason had cascading effects. NOPD took it over in 2010. But so if you got a ticket in that first 2 years, you are eligible for a refund with a little bit of interest in there, Gregory. They're going to give you like a little 7% yield on it. Because they assume you're going to take that money and put it in an ETF if you weren't
paying. And how often does the city pay off, when they've been found to owe some money in lawsuits? How often do they pay those?
Well, they had a good record going until lately. They just stopped paying them.
They hadn't been paying lawsuits in decades, James.
Has it been decades?
It's been a long time. They don't pay off lawsuits. Now, judge ordered them to pay, but...
I just assumed that there was some point where New Orleans did pay lawsuits, and at some point they stopped.
I have no memory of them actually paying, so good luck with that.
Well, I had a couple of traffic camera tickets, and they were not within the period where I would get it relieved, so I still have to eat that. In other local news on that front, the city's credit rating went up. So to borrow money to issue bonds.
That'll save them some money. Yeah,
save a couple bucks here and there.
I know Trump was tweeting about the Fed.
He wants zero interest rates.
Oh, my gosh. What planet's he on? This is not Germany. This is not Japan. We have a good economy. We have a strong dollar. You know what he's wanting to do? He's wanting the debt all refinanced at 0%. And then... then we have a huge amount of money. I see where he's going, but we're not getting there. You know, he's this real estate mogul that's now president, but yeah, I'd like some 0% money to build my buildings. Yeah, well, the government.
Of course you would.
Yeah, but this government's not going to get 0% 100-year bonds out there to finance the 20 trillion, 25 trillion. It'll probably be before he gets out of office. Assuming he wins. We're not going that fast up in debt the next year, but the government's overspend. Every president has for quite a long time. I think Clinton out there had kind of stopped it for a year or two. Maybe I'm not quite sure about that, but I think they had kind of balanced it briefly. And
Newt Gingrich overrode 3 of his vetoes to balance the budget. So I don't know if he gets credit.
Yeah, well, somewhere in there, they tightened that up, and then it all started back again. Like, gosh, we should be doing things with money, spending it. We can print more. It's good. So I'm a little at odds with the president on that, and I don't think we need a half point. I'm still, why do we need a quarter point drop? But the free market has already been... The capital markets already have dictated that treasuries are lower without the Fed having to go in there. Because, gosh, a year ago we were at 3, and now we're at 1.7 today. And, gosh, it didn't need the Fed to lower interest rates, just the markets. It happened.
Well, is the economy good or not? Do we need zero?
The economy's good. Yeah. Look at the job numbers. It was interesting. Also, I'll take this. So, okay, I'm in disagreement with the president on that. I know what he's up to, but we don't need lower interest rates. I'm still for we shouldn't even have cut that last quarter, mm-hmm. let alone he shouldn't get a quarter point this week. I'm not on board with that. With that said, I was watching Trish last night on Fox Business, and she was kind of running the numbers there. And it was her late show, of course. It gets repeated, I think, at 11 p.m., something like that. I'm not sure on the time I was up. And the part I caught was talking about back in May, we had illegal crossings of 130,000. And then June, it reduced to 86,000. And then July, it's around 60-something thousand.
Wow.
I'm like... What connected me, and it was interesting that it's dropped. So it's been impacted. And I think a big deal a big part of that is Mexico actually getting involved and stopping it from Central America. With that said, I'm not positive because I'm not going down there to look or check it out, but I'll take their word for it. But when you start thinking about jobs numbers, gosh, we got more people coming across the border than we have jobs available every month in this country. Thought? Your thought?
Maybe think more than that. Maybe more than jobs created, but we have that weird gap where we have 5 million job openings, but they're high-skilled jobs, and that's not who's walking across the border. We don't have a guy that's got AutoCAD drafting experience coming across the Rio Grande.
We are needing people to come over that can bring it. Bring skills, bring knowledge, smart, have a little money in the pocket. Yeah, I want to come over here and work and do some good. So it was just a correlation to job creation. Mm-hmm. I was seeing that.
Well, on since we're on this tangent, if I were president, my immigration policy would be, how about the whole world take an IQ test? If it's above 140, you can come on in right now. However long it takes for us to digest these smart people,
we'll
bring in some more regular people.
Use the process we have in place. We do have a process. Use it.
All right, these comment cards that we have, how do they figure into your event? Where do these come from?
Oh, this is something we've done for a few years. You know, and you know where I got the idea from? It'd be like name dropping, but somebody pretty famous in the survey business, having breakfast with him. Oh, it was in Barcelona. So that goes a few years back.
You want a name drop?
You can give his name out.
Was that Frank Luntz?
Yeah. So, and we were just having a conversation, and that was one of the ideas. He said, look, if I was doing what you do, I would be doing a survey every meeting I had, every event I speak at. He said, I would be doing a survey to make sure we're in tune with what people are thinking. I've done that ever since. And it's one of the greatest things is understanding how people are thinking, how they're writing it. You know, just at that core. And then you've got a number of things that just kind of are always repetitive, and it's different variations, but it's not how I think they're thinking. I'm really wanting to drill down. How are you thinking? And for those on Facebook and Periscope, you can see there's no names or it's anonymous. The only thing it's only is my name, cause it's a part of my logo. And otherwise there, what's your concern? Diversity, retirement income, low risk, acceptable return, and how to draw income from multiple qualified accounts. You know, I'll start at the back end of that. How to draw income from multiple accounts. Part of it is going to depend on what kind of return you're getting from those accounts. So kind of say if you've got proper asset blending, I'd probably let all and say it's IRA money, but you've got multiple accounts and it's a different asset class and it's properly balanced and blended, I would probably balance the income from all three of those accounts. Something to think about that way. So once again, it's also subject to return as well. If I have something that's returning really low, something that's maybe returning more and stable, might lean on the lower yield and allow the compounding to continue. Another thought in that. So once again, we'd have to see your situation. Low risk, acceptable return. What I define that as reasonable expectation. I don't know what it's an acceptable return. I've had somebody say, well, you know, I'm expecting about 12%. Well, that's not reasonable. It could be acceptable to you, but it surely isn't reasonable.
Well, like a savings account at the bank with your 0% interest, that's not an acceptable return. Yeah,
I would say and he's talking about low risk, so he's speaking conservatively there. So what I would kind of target, if I'm targeting money over, say, the next 10 years and we're wanting to be conservative, I would like to have in the range, try to get towards, can we grow this, say, at a 3 to 5% range? You know, that's kind of, can we get in that area? There is what we would try for on that and hopefully have a decent probability of success. Retirement income, there is no retirement without income. And so that kind of follows up, I think, on the two parts. And diversity, I think he's probably referring to diversification. That's why I like index ETFs. I like bond ETFs. That gives me diversity. And on index linked investing, I would probably use a couple strategies there. So overall, I'm thinking about broad diversification.
Yeah, that word means something different here than it does on, say, who's going to host the Oscars. Diversity. Right. Different conversation.
Diversity.
See, this.
I'm looking for multiple advisors. Diversity. I don't know. I'm thinking he's more diversification. I'm a financial guy speaking at a financial wine, wisdom, and food experience. I'm a financial guy on a radio. So we're diversity. That's diversification. Okay. The next one is everything. He just said, I need it all.
His concerns, everything. How do you even address that? It's one word. Is that enough information?
It's everything. He's probably needing to know about, he's not there yet. He's needing to save money. He probably doesn't know what his risk is. Is he conservative? He's probably wanting to have a conversation on that about return. And I'll just tell you, that's probably said he's needing a lot. So the first core thing is make sure you have emergency money and start thinking about saving as much as you can and compress time. And that might affect a life-changing decision because you're going to have to dial back maybe some of the things you're doing and spending on.
All right. I got a quickie here since we're running out of time. This guy says, what's your primary concern? Roth conversion and taxes - already retired. Now, the reason I'm interested in this one is, can he even go get something into a Roth if he has no earned income?
He can do conversions.
Okay.
He can't do contributions to a Roth, which would require earned income. I don't want to do a conversion and shift up into the next tax bracket. What is his taxes looking like? Is he going to have higher taxes? Is his income going to shift up because he has RMDs on his qualified accounts, meaning his traditional accounts? Is that going to push him up? So does he have margin, room in his tax bracket to start doing some of that? So that's some of the things you're needing to look at. I'm just not wanting to Roth for the sake of Roth and give Uncle Sam money ahead of schedule. I don't want to do that. And if I'm not going to be in a high tax bracket, why do I want to pay him ahead of time? So really comes out, does he have some margin? We should have a conversation. Call my office, 504-832-9200. And let's talk about your margin.
Tell me about your day job.
Oh, financial advisor, money manager. We are a financial advisory firm, and we do a great deal of looking out for you from the estate planning process. That's why we have Wes Blanchard as a estate planning attorney that's helping us as well. So if you want to have a conversation about what's going on with you financially, where you're at, how to create more efficiency on taxes, building an income plan, properly blending your assets, that's part of all this I'm mentioning is part of the guided planning system. The core thing that we do is the guided planning system. And if you'd like more information about that, call my office, 504-832-9200, GregoryRicks.com.
Yeah, it's got offices in Metairie. That's the main office. I stopped by the office in Mandeville today for the first time. Finally got to do a little tour there. We need to put some more stuff on the walls. I think a couple more charity galas and silent auctions could help us with that. And then there's also the Gulfport office. So GregoryRicks.com will get you in touch with those. Your home away from the show is winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. Go get that app. You can watch us, listen to us live, listen to the podcast, connect to all of our sponsors. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest, subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks and Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks and Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.